Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Synovus.com.
Hi, I'm Matt Lieb.
And I'm Vince Mancini.
And this is Pod Yourself a Gun, a Sopranos podcast where Vince Mancini and I go through every single episode of The Sopranos
and talk about it.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much again for listening. This is, once again, your gentle reminder to give us 5 stars and a review on the good old podcast app that Apple has. I got some great reviews last week. You guys are you're really not coming through in the clutch here. There was like 2, and I would like to reach multiple thousands of reviews a week. Is that so much to ask? Probably, but the point is yeah. But a little bit less than that would also be acceptable. So, yeah, do it. Give us a review and fucking, you know, just say something mean. I don't care as long as it's 5 stars. All right. With that out of the way, that important piece of business, today, Vince and I are going to be talking about, from season 5 of The Sopranos, episode 6, Sentimental Education. And our guest today is a returning Pod Yourself a Gun champion. She was on the first ever season of this podcast, and I believe that she's going to be just wowed and in awe of all of the improvements we have made on this show since then. Ladies and gentlemen, you know her as the producer and podcast host of Ethnically Ambiguous. Our guest today is Anna Hosnier.
Hi!
What's up? How you
doing?
Or
should I say, ciao?
Yes.
I'm sorry.
You should, because it's an Italian show.
Yeah. So also, I figured there's so much racism going on in this show. I was like, you know what? Coming in hot with Italian racism.
Yeah, just right off top, I would like you to do some reverse racism on Italians. Because, you know, they really... Mm-hmm. They really hand it to a lot of other races in this episode, specifically. It's pretty pretty racist. But before we get into that, Anna, can you tell me, do you like The Sopranos?
Yes.
All right. Good interview. Good interview.
We got that
moving
out of the way.
On.
Look, I watched it when it was happening in real time.
You watched it in real time?
Yes, because my dad was while it was being filmed, my dad was like, all you do is watch trash TV. Mm-hmm. You should watch stuff like MASH or The Sopranos. So guess what? I've seen every episode of MASH, and I've seen every episode of The Sopranos.
Oh, shit.
I mean, your dad had good taste in TV. Like, you can't really fault those choices.
2 of the best shows, you know?
Yeah.
I've never actually seen a single episode of MASH. That's got Alan Alda, right?
Oh, my God. You're so young.
It's not even that I'm young. I think it's first of all, it's not like MASH was making new episodes when you were young, right, Vince?
No, but it was on a lot. There was Hot Lips. There was Radar. He was a disabled actor. They never showed his hand. There was that one guy who dressed like a girl. Forget his name.
Really?
Yeah. And then they had two different majors. One of them had like a fishing cap, and then another guy was just gray haired.
Huh. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, so that's an interesting cast. As far as I know about that show, it's set in like the Korean War.
Yeah.
Which is like one of those wars that you're like, oh yeah.
Which ties into to this episode.
Yeah, you could call this episode. Yeah, this is the Korean War episode of The Sopranos.
Yeah.
But
I will say the first, what was his name? Henry Blake, who was Alan Alda's friend. Uh-huh. He passed away. He was replaced. But I met his wife once and I fucking lost my mind. And I was like, your husband's who? All my friends my age were like, you're out of control. And I was like, that's McLean Stevenson's wife. She was a docent she volunteered at a museum I worked at. And I would specifically ask to be, scedule to work on days she was scheduling so I could just talk to her about MASH.
Did she enjoy talking about MASH?
I don't know. Her husband died, so I don't know if she was like really feeling me, but it didn't really matter at the time because I was feeling me. Like, I feel like I was the only person in my age group who was devastated when I learned Alan Alda had Parkinson's.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Like, I was like, he's a national treasure. I've read all his books. Yes, starting from Never Have Your Dog Stuffed and Things I've Overheard While Talking to Myself.
Wow.
Okay.
Wow.
I don't. My dad created like an Alan Alda monster. And in the end, loves Sopranos as well because my dad tells me what to do.
Oh, I mean, you know, I've never heard of.
We're going to score one for the patriarchy there.
Yeah.
I mean, occasionally, this is why I say, you know, mansplaining is okay because men know stuff, bro. You know,
okay.
When like Alan Alda talks, you freaking write it down so you can have another book.
Exactly. When did the Parkinson's thing come out? Did that happen recently?
Yeah, it was pretty recently, but I was devastated.
He's very old.
So was my father.
I mean, he's a very old man.
Yeah, he has a podcast.
Does he? Is it the Alan Alda show?
Does. No. What is it called?
Are you a Patreon subscriber of Alan Alda's podcast?
If there was one, I would be. So I don't understand what the joke is.
When we were in Australia, this older Australian man told like a string of like 10 pretty offensive jokes. And, we're sitting around the campfire. And I told one about like the old people at the nursing home where the punchline is someone having Parkinson's. And he was just quiet for a second. And he goes, oh, I have Parkinson's.
Oh God!
And it was like my nightmare. Funnier than all his other jokes. It was great.
It's very funny with the accent. Yeah. I mean, that's what really sells it. Oh my God!
Okay, his podcast is called Clear and Vivid.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, for now. Anyways, I'm sorry.
Oh my God. I love him. My sweet baby angel.
I love him too. He's in one of my all-time favorite movies, The Aviator.
No, that cannot be one of your all-time favorite movies.
Why am I the only one who likes this movie? It's such a good movie. God. He flies a plane. They make a movie.
Come in with the milk.
Come in with the milk. Come in with the milk. Way of the future. Anyways.
I'll be real with you. Only reason I saw that movie is because Alan Alda's in it. And I'm dead serious. Took my friends. They were like, why are we seeing this? We were in like junior high. And I was like, Alan Alda's in it, you bitches. And you know, here I am.
But this is not a MASH Alan Alda podcast. No.
I wish it was.
I know you wish it was. So do I at this moment. But no, it's not. It is a Sopranos podcast. The only Sopranos podcast in the world. Thank you very much. And we cannot officially begin the podcast until we first hear the theme song. Pod. 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 podcast. Pod. 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 Podcast. Alrighty, Roo, ladies that and gentlemen.
Always kills me.
Man.
Always kills me.
I'm glad. I'm glad because, it stopped being funny like two seasons ago. And then every really? Once in a while, a guest will laugh and I'll be like, thank you.
Because when I watch the show, when they talk, I go pod with the actual TV show because of this. It just makes me, it's just the lack of enthusiasm in the voice just fucking gets me every time.
I like to undersell when I do the pods. But today we are going to be talking about Sopranos season 5, episode 6, Sentimental Education. This episode premiered April 11th, 2004. Vince, can you break us off a little piece of that synopsis?
I sure can. Carmela has another furtive romance collapse while Tony B throws away a chance to turn his life around.
Oh my God. Spoiler alert in the, way, the fucking synopsis.
First of all, another furtive romance. I'm pretty sure this is her first furtive romance. Like,
no, I think Tony Soprano was.
Well, I don't think that was exactly furtive, was it?
My issue is I don't know what furtive means.
Yeah, I'm either.
It means that's like sneaky, like you're sneaking around. You're furtive.
So, all right, so the first furtive romance was
like, you know when when you're gonna take a bath and you light all those furtive candles?
Furio.
It was Furio.
Maybe that's what they mean. But see, Furio and Carmela, they never even kissed. Like, that doesn't count as romance.
No.
Yeah, but they were having an emotional affair.
Yeah,
they were,
but to me, those things aren't important. It's whether
whether bases P they and get the G. To. Yeah.
Yeah.
You got to know a base. If it doesn't fit in baseball lingo, then cheating never occurred.
Then it doesn't count.
Ooh.
Them's the rules, which is why, you know, Vince, if your wife ever fell in love, had an emotional affair with a strong Italian immigrant, you'd be like, hey, as long as P doesn't go in VG and there's no base
sounds,
to assign.
That sounds great. Someone else is, doing some of the communicative heavy lifting around here. It sounds like a
I can't
load
imagine.
Off my shoulders.
I can't imagine.
I would love that. You see your wife, you're like, is she talking to Furio? What the fuck?
What are you doing talking to Furio?
Furio.
I call him
Furio. I like
Furio.
Saying all the names like so obnoxiously Italian. Furio. Yeah.
Furio. Furio. But before we get into that, what was happening, Vince, at the time that this episode came out?
That's right, Matt. I mean, of course, we cannot evaluate any art without knowing the cultural context in which it was released. And this episode, which was actually directed by Peter Bogdanovich. Not sure if you knew that. Written by Matthew Weiner of Mad Men fame.
Of Mad Men fame. Well, of Sopranos fame first. And
sure.
Then into, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he doubled down into Mad Men fame. This was this came out April 11th, 2004.
I should probably play the bumper.
Oh, yeah. You should. Womp, womp, daddy, daddy, mama.
Remember when it's the lowest form of conversation.
Yeah, you missed your cue on account of I didn't say the name of the segment.
Right.
And for that, you owe me an apology.
Fair enough.
So, right, we're taking you all the way back to April 11th, 2004. Some of the things that were happening, Phil Mickelson won his first Masters. On
Phil Mickelson.
Good old Phil Mickelson. Still going strong.
Is he still going strong?
Yeah, he won a major this year at age 51, oldest ever.
That's crazy. Golfers really never, like, getting old doesn't really matter so much.
Unless you're Tiger Woods.
Well, but
so much
Tiger's
as it getting addicted to, like, opiates or something.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's not so much age as it was, like, you know, pussy. That was his downfall, was wanting that pussy.
Well, also his father continuously cheating on his mother in front of him.
Yeah,
basically.
Like I said,
yeah, but he was doing that when Tiger was young. That was all fine you know, it wasn't.
He's genetically predisposed to loving Pussy.
Pussy.
Mm-hmm. Some of the other stories that were happening around this time. These aren't very good stories. I'm just going to say it right off the bat.
It's 85 degrees right now inside of Vince's house. A little little behind the scenes stuff for all you listeners out there. It's 85 degrees because his your AC broke.
Yeah,
right?
Which is fine because I live in Fresno, which is only 102 degrees today.
Right. And then also your computer is acting all funky. So I'm actually playing the clips today, which it honestly kind of strikes me as
Kage.
It's touch and go so far. This is from the LA Times. Milk prices going up due to reduced supply.
God, you really scream. Yeah, this was really like
I feel
a
like
10
this
minute.
Is I feel like you could write this story anytime. I feel like every 3 days there's a story about someone's mad about the price of whatever pork going up $2.
It's always funny when it's milk too, because it's just one of those products where it's like I imagine I've done it. I've been in the store. What you do is you go, Jesus, and then you buy the milk.
Yeah. These prices are out of control.
Jesus Christ, 30 more cents. Fuck.
It's like really, it's really sad because like milk like doesn't even see like oat milk coming.
Yeah.
I know.
Well,
I know.
Maybe they do.
For the crown.
Consumers can soon expect to pay 50 cents more for a gallon of milk due to a combination of smaller herds, higher feed and beef prices, less growth hormone on the market, and the emergence of mad cow disease.
Jesus Christ!
Milk prices reached a 25-year low last year, but are rebounding to record highs in 2004, helped by a reduction in supply.
Oh, man. You know, call me crazy, Vince, but maybe every week you should save the Remember When machine like fact gathering for the last 10 minutes like right before.
Wait, you know, yeah, this is the best one I've ever done.
That's a pretty good one. I really enjoy it.
I would leave it until like when you leave, you let the guests leave, and then it's just YouTube by yourself.
Oh, dear.
Sorry.
Top movies in the country. Passion of the Christ is back on top. I forgot to mention this is Easter weekend, I believe. In 2004.
Wow.
And Passion of the Christ is back on top. Everybody wanted to go. They were like, you know what?
Yeah.
You know how we can celebrate Jesus being reborn? By watching him be brutally killed for 2 hours.
People love it. The Christians love, it's their favorite thing to watch, is their literal God being murdered.
It's the persecution. You wouldn't understand.
Yeah. We like to cry.
Passion of the Christ, followed by Hellboy, Johnson Family Vacation, The Alamo, and Walking Tall.
Can you imagine Hellboy at the same time as Passion of the Christ?
That
being
is,
out?
You know, I didn't even think of the connection until now.
I just love that. It's
when you think
like,
about it, Jesus was the original Hellboy.
That's true. He had to file down his horns because he's trying to be good. But the Jew horns, you know.
Yeah, that was what that story was about.
That is what that's we right. do. We file down our horns.
Who played Hellboy? Was it
Ron Perlman?
Yeah, Ron Perlman.
Pearl Doggy. Surprised he was never in Sopranos.
Ronnie
was he?
Pearl Diver.
Yeah, he never was. He did have the face for it, but he's too Ukrainian Jewish for it. I think like
for
he
what?
Would have to be in the Sopranos is like a Guido. Like there are Jewish, you
he
know,
could have been
mafioso
like an Israeli like enforcer
nah, he's not,
kind of guy.
Yeah, I guess he could. He's kind of like, you know, but no. Nah,
Assad, eh?
He's very, he's got that Neanderthal like fucking brow that I find very cool.
Yeah, he's, I mean, I'm not a girl, but he seems ugly hot to me.
Yeah. Anna, as our resident
y'all
girl today.
Y'all are wild. Ron Perlman looks like if you gave like a brick arms and legs.
Yeah,
you know what, I love it. I'm so horny for it.
Yeah,
I
mean,
like he's not attractive, but he's like sturdy looking, you know.
Yeah, he looks like he has a thickie.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
He's got that vibe, sticky vibe.
No, I think he's got the live oak dick like Willem Dafoe with like little, you know, swirls and gnarls on it. Like he has like a varicose vein like right in the middle of it.
What are the top songs?
He's got that walking stick dick. What can I say? Top songs were Still Burned by Usher was the top pop song, and Figured You Out by Nickelback, top rock song.
Still on top. All right. So that is the Remember When machine. That is very important context to get into this episode. You need to know the price of milk to understand this episode.
Mm-hmm. If you didn't know that 2004 was like a high watermark for the milk price index without knowing that. Is there a way to bet on that? Like, can you buy milk futures on the stock market?
I wouldn't do it.
I mean, I wouldn't do it, but I bet you could do it. And that part of me is like, well, you should do it.
Like, you know, if you were like the Chinese Communist Party, say, and you wanted to release some mad cow disease.
And short the stock.
And short the stock. Okay. If I make that, I like that price, milk price go up. Because they don't like the milk. The milk's like,
come in with the milk. Come in with the milk. Come in with the milk. Aviator. All right. So...
God, you and the aviator, man.
So let's hop into this episode.
The Bloviator, starring Matt Lieb.
How dare you?
You asked for it.
As Vince said, the synopsis of this episode from IMDb, Carmela has another furtive romance collapse while Tony B throws away a chance to turn his life around. A lot of spoilers in that one. Didn't much like it. And I never liked the synopses, which is why every week... on this fair podcast, I do my own synopses, the Bada B stories.
I don't know if I like you having control of the sound drops. It feels like you know how newspapers need that firewall between editorial and sales?
Absolutely.
I feel like that's what this podcast needs, like a firewall between the clips that you made and
Totally. It's too much power for one man.
That's right.
Yeah. It's honestly, it's...
Kage?
I feel like it's that joke will make sense at some point. Anyways, ladies and gentlemen, I present to you, and since Vince doesn't have control of it, I will say this is a 2-minute long Bada B stories.
I fought my dad yesterday. He threw my fucking breakfast away. I swear I'll kick his ass one of these days. Was hoping I could move back home with my mom and Sopranos. Episode 6 of season 5. Carmela finally has a sex life. Luckily for her, Tony can't read all the signs. Mr. Wiggler isn't gay, yeah, Mr. Wiggler fucked your wife. There's Kim accusing Tony B of stealing one of his trucks full of laundry. But then he sees him studying, wanna start a business,
big success journey.
Call me Blondetto, call me Tony B, call me Tony's cousin, Tony Uncle Al. Call me a masseur, call me Henry Ford, call me a criminal, show me the window.
AJ, Carmela, AJ is trying. Just look at the essay he's writing. He's reading The Lord of the Flies, and okay, he might be plagiarizing.
Oh, Butterbee. Now Wegler will beg her to read Bovary. He's a regular Abler to her Heloise. Now Fagala Wegler is sleeping with she. But why did she leave?
Carmela feeling hella guilty. So Wegler helps AJ get a C. Carmela used her only weapon, her pussy.
Call me Carmela, call me Heloise, call me manipulative Madame Bovary. Call me a sinner, call me divorcee, but don't talk about my pussy, you better watch your back.
Pawn yourself a gun, please leave us a review on iTunes.
Alright, well...
Okay, can I just, before you continue, who produced that?
Who
produced that, and who's singing?
That's me, and I produced
now,
it.
Okay, now, why would you be wasting your time on this fucking podcast when you are creating masterpieces like that?
I don't know. I mean,
here's my advice to you.
Yeah.
get rid of this Vince guy. This is all about you, man.
I can't make the parody songs. I'm just here. I'm just finding articles about milk.
I'm going to be real with you. You don't need Vince, Matt. This is all about you. It's all about you and your soprano parody songs. This is an industry, okay?
Without Vince, I'd have been dead long ago, and I'm a man.
It's true. Vince is actually... I know one thing about Vince, that his nickname was DNA. Isn't that weird how I just always remember that about you?
Wait, anyway, why?
So I think Vince is great.
I assume I told that story when we were frauding with you. Yeah, it was because I was born with a hair that's half curly and half straight, and the guys on my basketball team call me DNA because they said I had fucked up DNA.
I thought it was because you had an extra chromosome.
Yeah, it could be.
I don't know. I always just remember that.
Makes the hair curl.
No, that's
sometimes
fair.
To Jack and Miles, I'll be like, oh, I got to get DNA back on. And
I love that. I really do.
I don't even remember your name sometimes. I'm like, who was DNA? No, I'm just joking. I know who you are. But I just never forgot that. And so anyway, that's reason enough to keep you around with your weird hair.
Yeah. Appreciate that. That makes me happy. As long as I'm remembered for something other than milk prices.
Yeah, no, I remember you for the milk prices and for your hair and for the loads of other things. But yeah, no, it's true, dude. Like fucking that, honestly, as I was doing it, I was like, you know, a lot of famous artists toiled in obscurity for the remainders of their lives until someday someone discovered and said, holy shit, this is a fucking Basquiat, you know?
Yeah.
This is a Picasso. Nobody knew who he was.
So you think you're gonna die, and 40 years after you die or something, someone's like, guys, have you heard of this show, The Sopranos?
Yes. And then they're gonna
people are writing parody songs about it.
Yeah, they'll be like, oh yeah, that's that very old man, Lil Nas X. He used to be young and do a song.
But you can only hear the songs if you listen to this podcast.
And you can only understand the songs if you also watched the TV episode specifically. Anyways, we got to talk about it. It's one of the great episodes of The Sopranos.
I think this is one of my favorites. I mean, this one has got multiple arcs that all pan out. You know, it's like, I've said this before. Like prestige TV now, I feel like they know, like they know that people are going to keep watching, so they don't feel the need to close story arcs like within a single episode. But this one, like there's things that keep going and keep happening and set up future episodes, of course. But
yeah,
these are like multiple complete story arcs like contained in this episode, and they're all equally compelling.
Completely agree. I mean, it really is Sopranos firing on all cylinders. It has some of the funniest scenes this season. It also has like some of my favorite
heartbreaking one. Like
my favorite Edie Falco shit.
This is my first rewatch. I hadn't rewatched The Sopranos since I watched it in its initial run. So like my first rewatch has been. For the show, and there are things that I didn't remember, but that whole scene with the whole arc with Kim and Tony B, I remember that whole thing, and just I remember it like kind of crushing me a little bit, just because they set Tony B up as this guy that you he clearly is nicer and.
He's intelligent and he has a greater
emotional intelligence than the other characters, and you kind of want to see him succeed. And then this episode just was like, no, he's a piece of shit too.
That's why, for me, the alternate title for this episode is Just When I Thought I Was Out. Because, you know, he's pulled back into the life in this episode. Unfortunately for him,
a complete like deus ex machina like coincidence thing. Like I think they would tell most writers that you don't want to write like some, you don't want the plot to hinge on some like crazy coincidence or something like that.
Yeah,
this one they throw like a giant coincidence out of left field thing in there and it totally works.
It fucks up his life in a way that it like totally makes sense. The same way lotto winners, you know, get their lives fucked up. But in a way, it's so much sadder because he finds $12,000, which is, I mean, nothing. It'd be great. I would love to fall ass backwards into a bag filled with $12,000. But
Matt,
it's
if
like,
you discovered like a bag full of heroin and money on the street, like what do you think would happen to your life?
I don't know. I'll tell you right now. Okay. I got to go. I got to get Francesca. Sorry, just
stay right there.
For the listeners, Matt's fiance Francesca texted me to tell Matt that she's outside of their apartment right now.
Podcast.
Like you as an ex heroin addict, if you were walking down the street and, you know, something like this happened where some drug dealers were fleeing the police and flung a bag of heroin and money at your feet, what would it do to your life?
I mean, it depends. I mean, first of all, the money goes directly into Bitcoin. We all know that.
Sure.
Oh God.
Well, yeah, dude, because that's going to be worth more money.
Invest in Ethereum. It's easier.
That's Bitcoin. That's what I said.
No, Bitcoin is Bitcoin and Ethereum is Ethereum. God, you're so infuriating.
They're all Bitcoins. Anyways, someone doesn't know about Bitcoin. obviously, it's the girl. no, I would. Yeah, I mean, I've often had the fantasy of like stumbling into like a giant car wreck on the side of a mountain that is a flipped over Walgreens truck. And it's just like, it's just packing like thousands of Dilaudid pills in big, like, you know, those like protein size, you know, like a whey jar, right? Mm-hmm. And just like a bunch of
a whey jar. That's so relatable. A whey jar.
You know
what? Go ahead.
You guys know what? It's a jar of protein, whatever.
What are you, my mom? Okay, I went to Costco. I have a few extra whey jars.
I mean, a lot of people like
those. Please take one.
My favorite Sylvia Plath novel.
Fuck all y'all. No, like I've had that fantasy, and it's what's interesting is that in this particular case, he throws out the drugs when Tony B finds it. He throws them out immediately and is like, "Oh, are you happy?" And he still fucks up his life because it's the money is the drug. If you understand art. Yeah, because money is a drug, if you think about it.
Mm.
Anyways, but let's not get ahead of ourselves. We start off this episode with Tony B, you know, working his day job, trying to be, you know, a square citizen of like, you know, loading up laundry, cleaning laundry. It's some sort of laundry service. And it gets stolen. It gets jacked right in front of him. He chases after it and he scrapes his knee. And
this episode really relies on New Jersey being just like a crime ridden hellscape. There's kids just like stealing vans to go joyriding. People are throwing drugs on the street.
Joyriding.
Early 2000s, okay? That's just how it was in Jersey.
I know, seriously.
This is kind of like...
in this economy, with milk prices the way they are?
Yeah, I feel like this episode is like what Republicans think like Portland or San Francisco is like.
This is literally how J.D. Vance describes every city that's ever existed in the United States. It's always just like, oh, you know, I'm about to go to New York City. How many guns should I bring from all the criminals?
Yeah, and it's like, bro, wasn't your whole shtick like growing up in Appalachia and writing a book about how all your relatives were like shooting each other and on heroin?
Oh, they were all criminals?
Yeah.
Yeah, but there were white criminals. It's different, bro. You know, that's the thing. It's safe crime. It's victimless crime, except for all the victims.
When Meemaw lights Peepaw on fire, that is that's just mischief. That's good old family mischief.
That's good old fashioned fun. You don't understand that, and you don't understand us. Squiddly deedly deedly dee. Anyways, So he skins his knee, and then we get to meet Mr. Kim for the first time on this show, and he is the...
We've met him before, haven't we? We just haven't... He hasn't had much dialogue.
Yeah, no, he hasn't said much. He's definitely been on the other side of a phone in a previous episode.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if we... No, I don't think we have. I don't think we've actually met Mr. Kim, at least to any big extent. Or if we have, it was just incredibly briefly. But yeah, we meet him for the first time, and he is kind of mad at, you know, at Tony B. And I have a clip.
So, Bandino, why you fuck me like this?
Fuck you talking about?
I no forget you professional criminal.
I didn't take your truck. I lost my study guide, my fucking flashcards. Sick of this fucking prejudice against ex-cons.
I never hire you if I no need Tony Soprano for union. Not for him. I show you the fucking window.
It's pretty good.
Pretty cool line.
Yeah. I mean, because it's like, he's not going to be like, hey, look outside the window. You see that?
Right.
That's a guy with an AR-15. And it's like, no, he means like he's going to throw you out the window, mm-hmm. I think.
He's threatening defenestration.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
This is like so perfectly sad. I just think it's... I forgot Buscemi was in Sopranos, so it was good to see him.
Yeah.
But then like this whole character arc, like as soon as I saw him, I was like, no.
Yeah.
And I mean, it was like, it's this episode. Yeah. And then like, they're just so like... One, it's like you got the stereotypical Asian boss.
Yeah.
Who's like... You know,
Tiger
and
boss,
like he has prejudice towards ex-cons. All of a sudden, this ex-con who's about to say some racist shit to him is offended by his it's just like,
yeah,
such a shit show of like just evil people.
Yeah.
God, this show is wild.
It's wild. Yeah.
What they got away with.
It takes like the two characters who like you most want the best for, and it shows mm-hmm. you why they can't have good things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This makes me sad.
What's interesting too is like, The Mr. Kim is a like infinitely mockable character in terms of if you are an Italian Guido and you're talking to Mr. Kim, you want to do racism to him immediately. You know,
no, what the hell?
No, you know, it's like throughout this whole episode, like everyone is doing these like anti-Asian like jokes, basically. Like there's some dog eating jokes that happen.
Oh, everyone makes a joke about eating pets.
Yeah,
I mean, I think that was so great the way they played that because,
yeah.
like when you know, when Tony first comes in and he makes the joke, you could kind of read that as, oh, like the creators of the show think that's funny. But then
right.
when Christopher comes in and makes the same shitty joke, it's very clear that the point is that they both are making the same shitty jokes.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, oh, there's a pet groomer out there in case someone gets hungry. And they literally both do the same goddamn joke. And also Chris is like, you know, talking about like Kung Pao Coochie. And at one point, Ro is just randomly starts crying about Jackie Jr. And then randomly just says the C word talking about Asians. Like,
I feel like this was the first time it had ever been established that the cover story for Jackie was that he got killed by like Asian gangs or something. Like, I don't.
Yeah.
I mean, wasn't he living like, didn't they put him up in the like black housing project specifically so that they could blame them for it? Or no, he was hiding out in them.
Yeah. He was hiding out in them, but I think it was at first implied, it was supposedly implied that he was killed by some like black gang members, mm-hmm. you know, black drug dealers. But
gang
then
bangers, you know,
gang,
they used
gang
to have
bangers.
Those. They don't have those so much anymore.
Yeah, because they're not just members; they also bang.
Mm-hmm.
Wait. So, just a reminder: they told her that's what happened.
Someone had to have told her that.
We're left to assume that. Yeah, based on this.
Yeah,
but we never saw that happen.
No, we never saw it happen. I mean, you see, Vito kills Jackie Jr. Just shoots him in the back of the head, and then
that's what I recall.
Has to squeeze himself back into a sedan, like. It's one of the many instances of the Sopranos doing death really funny.
And just taking any opportunity to make fun of fat people.
to make a fat joke, yeah. But yeah, no, Tony B is doing a really admirable job, not only just doing this, you know, square work, but also not being a piece of shit. He's not being racist to his boss. He doesn't say anything fucking racist. He's like very focused on his studies, you know?
They come to a begrudging respect with each other very fast, and it's like, oh, maybe understanding is possible.
Right. Yeah. And so what ends up happening is that Mr. Kim finds out that it was a joyride, that Tony Blundetto had nothing to do with it. Blundino, he calls him, because he's doing racism too. And then he offers him a job.
If you pass, then what do you do with this?
Be a professional masseur.
You don't think of masaji kage? You know, small sauna.
Just real quick, I had to turn on the subtitles for that. I thought he was asking him, you don't think massage is, like, kind of gay? That's what I thought he said. But then it turns out he said masaji kage. Do you guys know what kage is?
I assumed it was a type of massage or, like, a massage parlor, but I didn't pursue or research it further.
Okay. Did anyone else think that he said kind of gay?
I did for a second, and then I was like, why would he say that?
I mean, yeah, but I mean, for a second, that counts. All right.
Yeah, I can see it.
What's the thing? I get stuck with you, I think. Oh, shit. God damn it. You lazy American and criminal. No good for Kim. But you, worker for Kim and future. Like a Korean people.
I wouldn't say that.
I come from Korea, but I become Chan Susunka, the boss. That's why I try to help you. I stake you the money in the storefront. My daughter, very interested in a massage. She no like physical therapy no more. Crippled people make her sad. You pass test, then you, me, my daughter, we make the big success journey. Okay?
I mean... There's so much heavy exposition going on in that scene, and yes. And he pulls it off like just seamlessly.
It's really impressive, because, like, you know, at one point he's just talking about, like, I came to America with one pair of shoes and uncle's address, you know, worse than prison. Like, he's just going into his entire life story, but succinctly, which is an impressive, like, he's doing the Cliff's Notes of his immigrant experience, and all leading up to, hey, you get your massage license. If you pass that test, Tony B, I'm going to turn my my shitty travel agency into a massage parlor instead.
You and my daughter, who is made sad by cripples, can work together. Oh, I love that.
My lazy daughter, who's just, over all these old fucks. Like, what?
It is kind of wild that, like, you're right. There is so much exposition there. He's just, like, talking about how, oh, she's a physical therapist and she doesn't like it anymore. And crippled people make us sad. Like, whispering that because, I don't know, that's the one thing that he would find a little bit much to say out loud.
I won't lie. It does kind of remind me of my own father before he kind of like before years of me and my siblings being like, you can't say that.
Yeah.
You cannot say that. But early on, that's the kind of shit he would say before we had to be like, I'm not even joking. I'm sure I've heard my father make a joke about Asian people eating pets until we finally just kept being like, no, incorrect. That's a stereotype. Years of yelling that in his face. And now to this day, you see he's about to say something and he goes, you're right. I should not say that. He actually says it. He says, you're right. I should not say that before he even says it because he can see us all turning to look at him.
Right.
And then he goes, oh, no, you're right. I won't say that.
Yeah.
He's just addressing his own internal monologue.
Yeah, he does it all the time. That's when we know he's about to say something problematic.
You're like the Obi-Wan Kenobi hologram that just plays above his head before he says something
about truly the amount of shit my dad has said and the amount of, like, just imagine just like 100 kids yelling in your face like that, you can't say that.
That's so funny.
And then he's like, he's traumatized.
But you know,
but it worked.
In fairness, literally, he had really good taste in television shows, so it all kind of worked out.
Yeah, he's like, these Sopranos, they get it.
Yeah, these Sopranos, they say
all
it out
that
loud.
Racist shit.
Yeah.
I'm like, wait, Oh, no.
So, you know, Tony B takes Mr. Kim's offer and just kind of like really gets him going into like, oh, man, I really got to pass this test. You know, I mean, he's already studying really hard.
He's got a lot of supportive people in his life. He's got Mr. Kim. Yeah. He's got his girlfriend. And then he also has Christopher, who has taken like a weird
oh my God.
Interest in Tony B. And the best part of that is, like, even though this episode is like self-contained and has complete arcs, like the subtext of this that relies on past episodes is like the context for Chris being or like seeing himself as like the benevolent mentor is that in the very previous episode he just like beat the shit out of his fiance.
Right. Yeah.
I know.
Yeah, I mean, that's
beat the shit
is...
out of his fiance and like got drunk and shot up Tony's car and almost got
executed.
Yeah,
yeah.
But now he's all enlightened. It's really funny the way he talks, and you're like, "You mother, you sat on a dog,
and you sat on a dog. You sat a dog to death." And,
yeah.
You know, like it's one thing to sit on a dog; it's another thing to have that be its end.
I have to wonder, Matt, like being in recovery, like. How many times do you meet someone who has like just discovered like introspection at the age of like 37 and suddenly thinks that they're Buddha?
Yes, it happens a lot. And I will say that the way that he is constantly sharing his recovery knowledge with people really tracks with a very specific type of person in recovery. It's the type of person who relapses a lot. But as soon as they have put together a few days, a little bit of clean time, they immediately start in on like saying all of the platitudes that they can possibly think of.
Just
like,
drop, faith, fear knocked at the door. Faith answered. There was no one there.
There was no one
like,
there.
Like I had to rewind it to be like, what the hell did he just say?
That was the funniest. I was like, who are you talking to?
Yeah, who are you talking to is the question. Like, who are you, who's this for?
It's great because it's like he is doing the director's commentary for his own life is kind of like the way it comes off. And it's great.
I there are people who like think that if you just memorize enough of the sayings that we have in recovery, that alone will be the thing that keeps you, you know, from relapsing. And it absolutely isn't. And, you know, obviously Chris is a prime example of that. But yeah, at this moment, he is clearly sober. He is clearly rededicated himself to his recovery, and he's showing that by saying things to Tony B like keep your eye on the tiger, which what like I'm not even sure that is a recovery saying. Or he also says, you know, in recovery we find out that people's expectations of them are often because of their own insecurities or something. It was just like one of those things where it's like, I don't think we specifically say that in recovery. I think that's just something someone said in a meeting.
I mean, this whole episode, like to draw it back to like a single theme, it's all about people not seeing each other, like people seeing what they want to see, people seeing like versions of themselves.
Sure.
Or like whatever, like they're seeing other people in ways that flatter them. Every single character in this episode is doing that, and
that's true.
Yeah,
he is kind of doing director's commentary. He's also, you know, he's doing a little bit of like he's doing a little theme exposition in terms of you know the dialogue that they wrote for him. But everyone is helping out Tony B. Like you know, fucking Tony is supportive, even though he's mad. He's supportive of his journey to be a licensed masseuse.
He's gonna be
Vito,
his carp guy.
Yeah, he's his koi guy. Mm-hmm. He's gonna give him he's gonna hook him up with a koi connect.
Question,
and then Vito,
are koi expensive?
Oh yeah.
I assume.
Well, depends what kind of koi. But yeah, they
the
can be
ones.
Expensive. I think that's the whole thing, right? They grow really slow, and so like the big ones are valuable.
Is it true that if you put a goldfish in a big enough thing, it'll become one of those big goldfish?
Yes.
Is that
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they just keep growing.
Wait, really?
No, I don't know.
That means if you put a goldfish in the ocean, it would be as big as a city. Okay, so moving on.
No comment.
Summertime and the living is thirsty. At least it is in the Lieb household. And when we are trying to get hydrated, we reach for the best water on Earth. Fiji water.
Fiji water is bottled at the source and untouched by man until you unscrew the cap. Fiji water really is from the islands of Fiji, 1,600 miles from the nearest continent, and it is sourced from an ancient artesian aquifer and is naturally preserved from external elements.
That's right, Vince. You can literally taste the difference. So whenever we do an ad, we sometimes get samples sent to us of whatever we're advertising. And when I first got sent Fiji water bottles in the mail, I thought it was hilarious. I was like, I've tasted water before. Why would they do this? But believe me when I say this is absolutely the best water I've ever tasted. And that's because Fiji water is a natural artesian water with 100% natural electrolytes. Unlike some other top premium bottled water brands, Fiji water's electrolytes are 100% naturally occurring.
That's right, Matt. Fiji water has more than double the electrolytes as the other two top premium bottled water brands, giving it its signature smooth, soft taste. Fiji water is the number one premium imported bottled water brand in the US, and it has a perfectly balanced 7.7 pH.
Also, Fiji water's 330 milliliter and 500 milliliter bottles are made from using 100% recycled plastic. Fiji water continues to lead the top premium bottled water competition on launching 100% recycled plastic bottles. The aquifer Fiji water originates from is a sustainable source and will continue to replenish as the rain and water cycle persists in the islands of Fiji.
So get stocked up on Fiji water this summer and visit your local retailer to pick some up today for your next backyard party, beach or pool day, hike, or even your home office. It's not just water.
It's Fiji water.
Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Moving on, Vito is actually helping him in one of my favorite fucking scenes in this episode, where Vito is doing the flashcards and Paulie and Chris are just surrounding him, just being like the perfect versions of each of their characters.
Even I notice.
Fuck, fine, what is it?
Biceps.
The fuck, I knew that. My mind's all over the place.
Fear knocked at the door. Faith answered. There was no one there.
Why do you want to do this shit? So you could touch a bunch of strangers?
You really skeeve the human body, don't you?
You like this so much? Let me ask you a question. Why do pissing, shitting, and fucking all happen within a 2-inch radius?
Everybody asks that, Paulie. There's no answer for it.
They're all sources of pleasure, though.
Kage? Get the fuck out of here.
Sun Yun Kim, my boss, he's gonna back me on a whole storefront operation.
You're looking for money? Why not come to me?
I mean, they're all playing up their exact characters in the most perfect way.
Everybody asks this. Who asks that?
I've never asked that. Vito is right.
I do like how disgusted Paulie is with the human body.
Yeah, he really is. I mean, he's definitely like, look, it's Vince. If you show the dog in the middle of the podcast, I'm going to comment on it. You can't do that.
Got a little pee-pee for me? My little pee-pee for me?
All right. So,
baby.
Yeah. Anyways, yeah, he's disgusted by the human body. and he's disgusted by the idea of him, of like Tony B wanting to just touch people.
Wait, sorry. What's the radius thing? I don't understand.
Well, he's saying that pissing, shitting, and fucking all happen within a 2-inch radius.
Right.
Right.
Well, because it's like you have sex with the vagina. And then they pee from the butt, which is right there.
Yeah, women pee from the butt. Everyone knows that.
And it's all, yeah, it's all right next to each other.
I pee from my butt. But question. But then you can also have sex with the butt.
Yeah, exactly.
You can. That's true.
Yeah, they're all sources of pleasure, though, as Vito says, foreshadowing.
Vito's right about that. They are all sources of pleasure. I mean, like, even if you're, you know, like, not talking about specifically doing butt play, like, shitting is pleasurable. Who doesn't like to take a shit?
Yeah, that's true.
Anyways, so everyone's helping him out, and he does. He passes. Tony B passes his massage licensing exam very unceremoniously. The woman.
Yeah, I love how realistic that was.
Doesn't even look at him.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like that was is a very like libertarians would really hate this episode. All of the licensing, they'd be like, "Oh, yeah. Couldn't he just open the massage store? You don't need a license for that."
He wants to do it right. He wants to get he's tired of living that libertarian mafia lifestyle. He gets his license, and
I think it's funny that in the end he wanted to be a masseuse of all things.
Yeah, it is a wild choice. It was like one of those perfect choices, I think, in terms of writing the character, because it is so outside of the purview of the world of the mafia. Vince, feel free to take your shirt off. I can tell you're sweating your balls off out there.
It's very hot.
Yeah, Vince, take your shirt
off.
Do
it. Do it.
I'm sorry.
At least you guys aren't skeeved out by the human body.
I'm not skeeved out by your body. You've got a great body. I mean, this is just going to be wild.
Just couldn't handle it. You freak. Yeah. How dare you have a chest?
I mean, it's just such a good chest. I got titties. I got to work out.
I heard he pees from his nipples.
So he passes his massage licensing exam, and he's getting prepared to open up this massage parlor with Mr. Kim, and just when everything seems to be going well, Tony's got a koi guy for him. There's a really hot Kim's daughter's really hot, so that's cool.
But she's so lazy.
She's very lazy.
And she hates old crippled
people. She doesn't like being sad from cripples. Everything's going well. And then he and his wife, Tony B's wife or baby mama, are walking. And the drug dealer throws a bunch of money and drugs, a bag of money out. And
thoughts real quick. Mm-hmm. Now, would you, if you were on the run from the police, would you be driving that erratically?
I mean, I think it makes sense, because the reason he's driving erratically is that he wants to get far away enough from where he throws the drug so they can't pin him on it. And so that way, even if they pull him over, what do they get him from for speeding, but they don't get him for possession.
Sure, but he looks like he's like Cruella DeVille, you know, when she's like in a cartoon. Yeah, like, and I was like, you don't need to be shaking the steering wheel that hard.
It does
drive.
Look like he is on the road to doing dog murder.
He's relaxed, dude.
He's driving like a dog murderer, but you know, he's trying to get rid of the drugs. And
Tony B's girlfriend, who we find out that he's met through some sort of app.
Through a website, through the internet.
Yeah, she says you're doubly blessed, which I thought would have been a good episode title.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's doubly blessed. He's doubly cursed. Yeah, at first she thinks it's a fetus, which, hilarious. Again, it's like perfect sign of the time, because she's also like, she is, gives me real like evangelical Christian vibes, mm-hmm. Without me actually knowing that or them actually explaining that in any way. I get the feeling that she's like an evangelical Christian, and just through kind of like propaganda alone in the church, she's convinced that, like, you know, because of abortion, people are out there just throwing fetuses like on the ground, you know, there's like, I feel like dumpster babies were a meme back in the day for Christians.
Right.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So no, it's not a fetus. It's a bag of money. And then we watch Tony B, transform rapidly into a kind of a degenerate. He starts gambling. he buys a suit.
He immediately has like a gold suit, like the worst. You're like, what?
The worst part of it is that, like, maybe it's just the worst part for me, but like, because he's still 1 foot in, 1 foot out, like he's still trying to be square, but he also wants to look nice. Because of that, he doesn't even get a stolen suit that he totally could have gotten a discount on from, like, you know, like Parisi's people, or like one of the people like has, you know, cheap suits. But no, he buys it like off the rack and gets it custom made, and you just know, like, oh, he's spending extra money he doesn't even have to, because he hasn't.
And it's $12K. It's not that much.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Like, $12K is such a meager amount. It's like, it's just so sad to throw your whole life away for $12K. You know, he starts gambling. He gets the suit. He gets some new shoes. And every day after, you know, spending all night gambling, he wakes up and he goes back to work doing laundry, and you see the resentment starting to grow, which is a resentment that I think everyone has, but not everyone else has the option to make way more money doing something way cooler.
Yeah.
So eventually, you see
the draw of the mafia in this episode, which is that you can basically do nothing. Like, you don't need to go to work.
Right.
You can stay all night gambling and then mange and sleep for 14 hours.
Yeah, it's a beautiful life. And I don't understand. I mean, I could see how it would be appealing and you wouldn't want to leave it.
Could you? I don't see it. Like, to me, I was like, you're going to stay up all night and gamble? Like, it's not.
Yeah, well, for him. Fun? Yeah, also, like, the staying up all night thing. I'm younger than they are, and I cannot imagine like staying up all night and then like pulling an all-nighter and then going to work the next day. There's no way.
But, you know, these guys don't really have, you know, they're not thinking about the next day. You know, they're thinking about, you know, the next envelope. That's what matters to these guys. Mm. So to wrap up Tony B's storyline, Tony B gets sucked back in. He loses all the money except for $400.
Yeah, it's like, I'm not an idiot. I kept $400 of the 12 grand.
Yeah, which, you know, that's significantly less than 12 grand. And he's mid, like, painting, you know, the massage parlor. And Kim shows up and just tries to, you know, do some idle conversation with him. And Tony B, well, he gets pulled back in.
Hey, Henry Poor, big entrepreneur. I might come. My friend, Pac, come by? Fix his toilet?
It's not fixed. He's got to come back with a fucking part.
Oh. Pac, he good plumber. Right over here. Where's it called? Well.
West Claw Wow, West Claw Wow. West Caldwell.
So, partner, we open in 3 days, huh?
Fucking stroll in. I'm over here busting my fucking ass.
You fucking creature!
Fuck off! You fucking laundry! All fucking day!
I like that in the middle of that, he neglected to imagine that Mr. Kim might know martial arts.
Yeah.
Well, that's also like another weird racist stereotype.
Yeah, they're like,
and you know what? He actually knows how to fight back with.
Yeah.
I don't even know. It was just like, oh,
he did
okay.
Like a block. He did like a block and then like a punch in the stomach. It was pretty good.
Yeah. No, yeah. I mean, you know, everybody was kung fu fighting. And
yeah.
And,
exactly.
And I like in that scene, it's like, you know, oh shit, he's gone. As soon as he starts going, West Call Wow, West Call Wow, you know, like making fun of his accent, that's when you really are like, ah shit. He resisted for so, I mean, like every single scene with Mr. Kim, you know, this guy is like having to. He's just Anna's dad. He's just has to be like,
yeah.
I'm not going to say this. I'm not going to say this. I'm not going to say this. And then as soon as he says West Caldwell, that's it. And yeah, he beats the shit out of Kim. And then he goes over to Tony and is like, hey, what about this airbag scam you got going? And Tony tells him, he's like, you know, it's tough doing business with people who aren't your family. And all I could think is, like, how much of your business with your family ends in bloodshed, bro? Like, the worst that can happen to you when you do business outside of your family is, you know, the business doesn't go well. Someone maybe screws you out of some money. You know, you end up in court litigation. Like, with you guys, it's death. People die.
So, yeah. I mean, the whole thing with their entire social circle is that they like prey on their social circle. And so like, mm-hmm. they don't see, even with Carmella, like there's no separation between like people that you get favors from and lean on.
Mm-hmm.
There's no separation between that and like friends and acquaintances.
Right. Yeah. And speaking of Carmella, let's get into her storyline.
She finally gets to get some, which was very exciting.
Oh, Carmella getting some dick is maybe the best I've felt in years. Every time I watch this episode, I'm like so happy.
And the beauty for her to get. Yeah, the beauty of this whole storyline is that these are like the good characters in The Sopranos to some extent. So you were like, you're sort of rooting for them to get together. And yet, like immediately from the first, like they're both such clueless assholes with each other. They're both only like seeing what they want in the other person and not the other person's what they want. And like they're not seeing each other as people at all. It's
No. Yeah. They're both after something. And it's not, that's not to say it's bad to necessarily have expectations of someone or want something from someone in some fashion. Cause like Carm wants to be with somebody outside of Tony. Right. I mean, that's what she wants. She wants to feel loved. She wants to feel sexy. She wants to feel wanted. All very like, I think,
and yet
natural.
She can't shut up about AJ every time they're together. Like, Jesus, give this guy a break.
Yeah. And that's, you know, I think that's,
how dare you?
That's the downfall, you know.
How dare you, Vince? Carmella is a mother.
That's right.
Okay. Everything about Anthony is just like, he's such a, like, he's so Tony Soprano's little shithead son.
Yeah.
Like, Carmella deserves a medal. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
I'm
yeah.
sorry. But to one, be married to a trash bag mobster.
Yeah.
And then you got fucking Anthony running around like, like pissed about everything,
pissed about
smoking
cereal.
Weed at his communion. Like, he's just a little shithead. And she's like, this fool's not going to be able to get into Arizona State. Yeah. Are you kidding? That's like, you're, you have so little faith in your child's like survival that you're like, please, Arizona State, please God, Arizona State, let this little idiot in. That you want him to go to a college that's going to make him potentially even more shitty.
Yeah.
Please, just let him go to college with some aspiring porn stars.
Yeah, right.
It's like she has nothing for this kid. She's just trying to hold on to sanity for this. And Anthony is notoriously like the worst like TV son you could have.
Yeah.
I mean, there's probably worse, but Anthony's a fucking little shithead.
He is, but they also have given his character like a slight extra layer in this episode. Like he's still the you know, penultimate or the ultimate shithead son, like the pinnacle of the kid that you don't want to have. But he's also getting like legitimate laugh lines in this episode.
Yeah, I mean, his shithead behavior in this episode is so fucking funny. We open with AJ and Tony. Like, he's literally complaining about not having the correct breakfast foods. Like, he's mad about it, and he's just bitching about it. And they have this fantastic scene. I have a clip.
I told you, write it down. I'll have to go pick up whatever you want.
She doesn't know the difference between fruit roll-ups and Pop-Tarts.
I know, everybody's an idiot to you. You know, they got these places called supermarkets where you go, and you buy the things that you like.
And when am I supposed to do that?
Well, as far as I can tell, you spend most of your time on a phone.
Ed, coming home drunk sounds like you.
What the fuck did you say to me?
What the fuck called me?
Or what? Or what?
One of these days, you wait. I'm gonna kick your fucking ass.
What's wrong with right now, then? Huh? What's wrong with right now? Come on! Now you got nothing.
Throwing out his cereal is maybe the most violent thing Tony's ever done. Like on this show, like it's one thing to like beat up your son and just like throw him against the wall for being, you know, insolent, but man, dude, he just took his cereal and threw it out the window.
Yeah, well, the part where AJ crossed the line is that now his jokes at the expense of his parents are actually landing, and that just makes them hate him so much more.
Yeah. They hate him on a real deep level, because, you know, that's the thing with most families. Like, family can really say the thing that fucks you up. But you don't want to say that to Tony. So that leads to like Carm actually having a sit down with with Tony and AJ, and you know, AJ wanting to move back home. And it's very cute, and it wraps a nice little bow on that storyline of like AJ living in the Soprano bachelor pad.
The chickens are coming home to roost now.
Yeah, because you know, now Carm is getting in this kind of like furtive relationship. Yeah, mm-hmm. I learned a word.
Mm-hmm. And I was talking about, you know, Carm not giving it a rest. You know, talking about AJ. Meanwhile, mm-hmm. like Bob, Mr. Wagner, cannot give it a Wegler. Fucking rest with the Flaubert.
This fucking dude.
Like, he, you know.
He's such a fuckboy.
He comes up with, like, some good explanations of why he wants to fuck Carmela, but they're not really true. Like, he is trying to, like.
He's running game.
Yeah, and he's, like, he's trying to run his soft boy game on Carmela, and it's not really working at all.
I think it works. Like, Carm's trying to fuck, but the problem is that he's using like the level of like game that he's throwing down on her is not necessary. You know, like, she doesn't have to read fucking Madame Bovary.
He's used to trying to fuck at like English teacher conferences, and she's like, yeah, I don't really care about Madame Bovary's. It's kind of weird that you tried to make me read a book. I told you I didn't like it. And then as a gift, you bought me like a first edition of Madame Bovary, and she's like,
you bought
she's
me a just, worse Bovary.
She's just like, yeah, this would look great in a den. Basically, like, this is the grown up version of AJ buying her The Matrix on DVD. Because it's like, she doesn't have any interest in Madame fucking Bovary, but this guy, he keeps going with it. Like, it's like he has one move, and even when he sees it not working, he can't deviate from it.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. It is just, it's AJ buying his mom the Matrix and then immediately opening it up and watching the Matrix. It's like, yeah, it is it's all for show, it's all for perception, and he doesn't need to work that hard. Like, she's like, no, I'm already into you,
right?
Like, you don't have to send me books, give me book I don't need a syllabus in he's order like, to fuck you.
He's like college,
you have yeah, leather yeah. shoulder pads, leather elbow pads. This is, you're hot. I get it.
He's like a college guy who, like, he's already got the girl back to his room and he keeps playing Dave Matthews Band, like, on his acoustic guitar. And the girl's just like, hey, I'm here. I want to fuck now. I don't even care about Dave Matthews. Like, stop it.
And he's
it.
Like, oh, but I also learned all of Crash.
God, if a guy handed me Madame Bovary, I would be like, are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah.
Why would you give me this fucking book?
Yeah. I mean, cause also, like, of all the books, I mean, like, he could have given her something contemporary, but no, he's given her the full Flaubert.
I don't know anything about Madame Bovary. Is it a book about fucking?
I mean, it has ovary in the title almost.
That's so, what I said. Yeah. I was like, it's gotta be. It's like about a madam's ovaries.
No, he likes, he clearly has, they've established that he likes books about, like, yearning and,
right.
God, what is it about? It's about, like, a bored woman
or
something.
Yeah, it's like about a repressed lady who has, like, affairs in her mind, I think.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so.
I've never read it. I don't 100% know.
Okay, so it's part of the game then. It's like, it's all part of, like, you know, do you see a little bit of yourself in here, you horny little
babe? It's also, like, I don't know if David Chase is, like, obsessed with Flaubert, but there was, like, a whole interlude with the fucking Poison Madeleine with Melfi, and now we've got more Flaubert.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah, it's whatever. It's like, you know, it's intellectuals. It's the intellectual mating dance. It's like, you know, everyone puts up their fucking trapper keepers and makes a bunch of pretty colors, and then all the hall monitors try to fuck.
Yeah. Anyways. I mean, it's kind of like when Aaron Sorkin references, like, the same five fucking books and everything that he writes.
Yeah.
It's that, but not as obnoxious.
Yeah. So Wegler's moves are definitely working on him, on her. She, you know, she goes in to, like, talk, you know, the cover stories. They're going in to talk about AJ. Carm actually does care about talking about AJ, but mostly Wegler just wants her to come over, and she finally does. Carm has sex with Wegler. You see her fucking, you know, pillow talk. It's mostly about AJ.
And has clearly just been going nuts on, like, the Stairmaster or whatever she's doing.
Yeah.
She looks fit as hell in this episode.
She looks great. And then, you know, Carm sneaks back home after fucking Wegler and just stares at a picture of Tony and AJ on a fishing trip and immediately gets the handgun from the living room.
Yeah. Could you explain that to me? Like, what was that moment for her? Like, she got scared?
She's scared, like, of Tony. I mean, like, she had the whole conversation with Wegler. She's like, yeah, I should probably warn you that you might get killed for fucking me. And then Wegler kind of just like waves it off, like, haha, I'm sure, like, that wouldn't play too well with the admissions department at Arizona State. And it's you think that it. Tony Soprano gives a fuck about that? Do you think that's going to save you? Like, this guy? Yeah.
Again, it's like that character, it's that character from Die Hard who tries to reason with, you know, it's like, there's so many of these characters who are just like, I think in this day and age, violence isn't real. And, right. You know, like, yeah, it's people with egos, especially when you're smart or, you know, you're an academic, your ego is telling you, I could outsmart the violent people. You know, you feel like you're going to be able to fucking Bugs Bunny your way out of any fucking situation.
Okay, that makes sense. Because at first I was like, is she just realizing she's alone, so she needs the gun because she's scared? Mm-hmm. But that makes sense now that she's actually realizing that Tony could find out and get upset.
Yeah, I mean, he...
Got it.
I mean, he chased... Well, he didn't chase Furio anywhere, but he made a lot of idle threats about Furio just for them having... Just for her saying that she was attracted to him, and that was enough for him to go nuts.
Yeah, so what is he going to do, you know, if fucking she finds out... He finds out that she's fucking someone, especially
this
dude.
I mean, Paulie had some knuckleheads chase a principal through the halls of the high school just so... just to get the principal to ask his mom to be nicer to Polly's mom, you think?
Yeah, no, like, these people will do violence for menial shit. which is one of my favorite things about this show. But also in that picture, not to get all arty, but she's literally looking at Tony Soprano and a fish. And there's, you know, a little bit of like sleeping with the fishes, you know, I don't know, you know, but like, yeah. You know, like art, the way art works is sometimes there is a symbol.
And then, Tony has such a stupid look on that, on his face in that picture, which makes it so much better. Like he's got the perfect, like dorky dad just caught a fish look on his face.
Right. But, you know, he's a murderer. So, Carm, we get a little bit of Father Phil in this episode. And I love the return of Father Phil.
Yeah.
Because he's such a shill. He's such a bitch. Like,
yeah.
I mean, Carmella did start that conversation with, yeah, I thought he was gay. I totally thought he was gay at first. He totally reminded me of you.
Yeah,
that was the best. That was an LOL moment for me. I guffawed.
Yeah, that it's so perfect too, because you know, like Father Phil obviously is going to take offense to that on multiple levels. One, obviously, he's a Catholic priest and he thinks that like you know being called gay is a sin. But he's also like, bro, I could have fucked you. Like he's like looking, he's looking at Carmella like I could have had that. You
yeah,
know,
and meanwhile, she's like totally making fun of him. Like, hey, remember when you like came in your pants?
yeah. And so, yeah, Father Phil's being a total fucking, you know, dickhead about it. Is like, you know, maybe we should bring Tony in on this conversation. And she immediately senses hostility. She immediately is like, why do you have that in your voice? Which part of me, I was like, Carm, you got to know what you're doing here, right? Like, you're telling Father Phil, a fucking Catholic priest and a friend, but a Catholic priest about this?
Yeah, he was never a friend. He is an acquaintance who wants to fuck her.
Yeah, I know, but that's the thing. Even that, it's like, you know this guy wants to, you know, wanted to fuck. Like, why are you... I don't know. It seemed like kind of... hostility was going to come with the territory. Sure. Even for
also, I don't trust him.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. Easily no, you shouldn't. Snitch. He's not a trustworthy guy. But, yeah, so after she has sex, she immediately goes to Father Phil and just rubs it in his face.
Carmella?
I had sex with that man.
Big success journey!
And then there's a scene where Ro is, you know, telling Carm to be careful, and AJ comes home from school. After Carm is saying all these nice things about Wegler and, like, having sex with him... Yeah, AJ immediately comes home and just starts calling him gay.
Yeah.
And yeah, I have a clip of that.
I will say that he took his time.
Oh, you're not getting off that easy. Come on, details. Come on. Hello there. Hey, AJ.
Hey, Aunt Ro.
How was school?
It sucked. Mr. Wegler pulled me out of language lab to go over my term paper notes. I didn't have my stuff with me, so he puts his faggy hand on my shoulder and says, do your best.
Well, that's his job, to get you into college.
Or maybe he's just a big homo.
Kage?
I like this because, do you remember Idiocracy?
Of course. Yes, like, I was the exact same thought.
Luke Wilson like comes back from the future and whatever. He's unfrozen in the future. And yeah, he's using like regular words, but to all the future dumbasses, he sounds like he's super smart, and they all think he's gay because he keeps using big words. It's like Mr. Wegler doesn't realize that he is in an Idiocracy, and everyone thinks he's a homo because he keeps talking about Flaubert.
That's the first thing I thought, is that everyone is Justin Long's character, the doctor in Idiocracy, where they're like, yeah, the problem is that you talk like a fag and your shit's all retarded. Like that is exactly what everyone, they just assume because he's smart and he knows about Flaubert that he must be gay. And yeah, actually Mr. Wegler calls in the middle of this conversation where Tony finds an essay on Lord of the Flies that AJ forgot to take from his house before he moved back. And, you know, Carm's world about AJ, all of her delusions about him just being kind of like, oh, you know, he fell in with a bad crowd or whatnot. He would never cheat, you know, it's just coming crashing down. And Wegler calls right in the middle of that and wanting a little bit of sexy time. And I have a clip.
Hello.
What are you wearing?
Yes, hello, Mr. Wegler. Hi, I'm afraid now is not a good time.
What are you wearing?
Well, yes, thank you very much. I will make sure that he brings it in.
What are you wearing?
Okay, goodbye, Mr. Wegler.
I have made reservations at that crab place down by the shore.
Right, okay, thank you.
What are you wearing?
What's that fag one?
Jesus Christ, oh Tony, everybody's God. A fag to you. You know, maybe you're a fag. You ever think about that?
Could I help it if I know one when I see one?
Oh, really? What are the signs? Education? Culture?
Sucking the guy's cock usually tips me off.
Just, yeah, and Tony is constantly calling people gay who he sees in any way as a sexual threat, not just as a smart person.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he was calling a park ranger gay at one point.
Right.
Because a park ranger was too smiley at Carm earlier in the season. So I think that's just his... he's trying to poison the well on any men in her life by just associating them with gayness.
Traditionally has not worked well.
Yeah. But
everyone's gay to them.
Yeah, that's true.
Like,
I think
Anthony thinks he's gay. They just call any dude who's not associated with their family a homo.
No, they think everyone's gay. I mean, I think it's just in general, the Medigan, non-Italians are, I wonder if that's a thing. If you went to Italy, do they just look at anyone who's not Italian and they just be like, bunch of gay people over here? Is there, I mean, I don't know what that is. There is kind of a tough guy thing in general where most tough
guys.
But
there's also being very vain and wearing loud silk shirts thing. So I don't know how that squares.
How do you square that? Like Italians wearing silk and calling other people gay.
Well,
I think
mean,
you put that on them. I don't know that they necessarily do that.
Oh.
Wow. Cancel. I will say that Iranian men are very touchy-feely with each other.
Yeah.
It's just culturally everyone is they'll hold hands and hang out and put their arms around each other and kiss each other on the cheeks and stuff. They're very physically emotive,
mm-hmm.
With their friends, and still a lot of extreme toxic masculinity.
Yeah.
In a way.
Right.
Well, the most hetero thing you can do is be super homoerotic with your male friends.
Right. And it's also the most Scorsese thing you can do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Here it's you read a book, you're gay. Okay. All right.
Yeah. Fair enough, though. That's true.
Yeah. So the thing but it's not a stereotype. It's fact.
It's a fact. That's why I listen to audiobooks. Because I'm straight.
Oh, wow. That's super straight of you.
Reading with your eyes that's gay. But listening, that's so I could work out at the same time.
Right.
Which isn't gay.
There's
Vince,
nothing
what were you
gay
say?
About that.
I was just going to say, the interaction when Tony when Tony and Carm find the essay that AJ is obviously bought online in order to cheat. Because mm-hmm. in that moment, Carm is her world's crumbling because he's AJ's terrible, whereas Tony's just kind of he's growing up, my little boy's growing up, he's trying to cut corners yeah. He's been taught his whole life.
Yeah, he's a little bit proud of it.
Yeah,
which is it makes sense.
And we're tough on Carm. Look what she's dealing with, you guys. She deserves a medal.
Yeah. She really does.
She should have fucked Furio.
She does deserve a medal, but you also, she's made this bed for herself. She has the whole teary conversation with her dad about how no one's ever gonna look at her. People mm-hmm. are always gonna look at her in a certain way because she was married to Tony Soprano for all these years, and you're kind of like. Yeah, that's true.
It sucks.
You did that.
It does suck, but it is. It kind of comes with the territory. So I don't know what to tell you. And he literally just walks out of the room.
Yeah.
He's just that is true. Anyways, bye. but before that happens, Carm comes over and tries to have sex. She wants to have sex, but then she pulls back because she's like, oh, what about AJ? And I don't know what's going to happen. And you know, leaves Wegler unsatisfied. And he literally is like, come on, man. Like he like pulls like a Biden. It was just like, he's just like, come on, man. Like he is mad about it. So he immediately goes over to Fisk, who needs to, you know, like, this is a grade that AJ is counting on in order to actually be eligible for college, for Arizona State. And he puts the squeeze on him and is like, come on, you know, give him a C-. And I guess he does do that. And then Carm jumps his bones in the next scene, clearly very happy that he did that for her. And after sex, once again, she just keeps talking about her shithead little son. And Wegler has had it. He can't take it anymore. And they have this great breakup scene that I have a clip of.
You're a user.
I don't know any other way to put this. I think you're a user, Carmella.
What?
Maybe you saw an opportunity in me and you just took what you needed.
How could asking someone you're with for help be using them? That's what people do. Bob, this hurts.
You strong-armed me using the only weapon you have, your pussy.
How dare you talk to me that way?
Okay, let's pretend you don't know what I'm talking about.
I don't.
Your pussy.
Of course, I don't have a fucking master's degree.
Leaving me with a massive hard on the other night and then practically attacking me sexually after you got your pussy.
You know what, Bob?
Pussy.
You are fucked up.
Pussy, 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 pussy.
You need help, you know that? Fucking idiot I am.
Your pussy. I just thought you should know how I feel.
Fuck you.
Your pussy.
Yeah, you know, there's something
something about David Strathairn saying pussy.
I know.
Your pussy.
Even says that word, as that character, even says the word pussy kind of gay. And I don't mean that in like a derogatory way, but like it's like he's he had no confidence in the word pussy when he said the word pussy.
Yeah.
Your
like
pussy.
He, you know, like he hasn't said it out loud in years. And his mouth wanted to say vulva, but but he knew he had to, like, it was a breakup, so he had to say something manly.
Your pussy.
And he really was a wolf in sheep's clothing. That's how Carm describes him.
It doesn't matter how much Flaubert you've read. He gets left with a hard on, quote unquote, once, and he immediately like turns into the fucking.
He's toxic. He sucks. He was the user.
Yeah, no, he immediately turned into like a dazed and confused character after like one blue ball.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's and it was also like after him choosing to help out to help out AJ, you know, help out Carm with AJ's grade, and he acts like he did this like fucking like he did extortion. That's like the most annoying part of it, is that he is like, every time I think about, you know, putting the arm on Mr. Fisk, I want to like poke my eyes out or some overly dramatic fucking probably Greek based violent thing he read. And
like you cheapened your standards at the private school you work at. Like, oh, I'm sure you've never had an instance of grade inflation at like the expensive private high school.
I think he's mostly just sick of hearing about AJ and realizing this was a huge mistake. So she cries about it and, you know, talks to her father, and her father just goes, yep. It was like, well, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, bonehead move. Bye. Yeah. Yeah. Anyways, did you have a favorite or least favorite scene, Anna?
Maybe the finding of the money.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's something so funny about that when she thought it was a fetus. Like, it's just so strange how the car was driving off. Like, it was just such a, like, batshit moment.
Yeah.
I enjoy it. I laughed. I was like, what are the odds? Then he just like threw the drugs.
Yeah, yeah. No, that is
okay.
Vince, do you have a favorite, least favorite?
Oh, my least favorite is when they're doing like the classic like people falling in love montage with Wegler and Carm, and they show them feeding each other, which I feel like they do that in every romantic montage in movies where they show the people feeding each other, and it's like why does that equal romance? It's a weird
thing. And not only that, but the food on face. I have a very specific thing about food on face.
That's not cute. Don't ever put food in my face.
Don't ever put food on my face. Yeah. Don't you ever fucking do that. All right?
Yeah.
Never do that. I have never had the love of my life feed me while we're laughing.
No.
That's funny imagery.
Yeah, that's, you know, that because it's ridiculous.
That's how you choke.
But you know, maybe I've just never experienced real love though. I have no least favorite scene, and you know, I just think it's a great episode, probably one of my favorite. It's an all-time great in my opinion. So I don't know, I think I'd give it a B+. Vince, what would you give this episode?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to find any faults with this episode at all, and that's why I give it a solid B+.
All right. Okay. That's good. Anna, what would you give this episode if you had to give it a rating?
I'd give it a C-.
God damn you.
You know why? Because I'm a user, okay? And I won't stop.
Yeah.
And I don't care if you guys have a little bit going on. You know what? I'm giving it a C-. Because this episode is going to Arizona State, baby. Okay?
All right. That's fair. Okay. No, that's totally fine. You can give it that.
Your pussy.
Mr. Wegler has come over here. Your pussy. What's that, Mr. Wegler? Oh, you want to bump that grade up to a B+?
Pussy.
I guess
pussy,
we have
pussy,
to do
pussy,
it.
Pussy.
Wow. Matt Fredo Corleone Lee.
Hey, you fucking used your only weapon, your pussy.
Your pussy.
Pussy. All right. This has been an A+ episode of Pod Yourself a Gun. Anna, where can people find you on the internet or in real life? What's your
address?
Don't
ever fucking find me in real life. I swear to fucking God. I am so horrible in person. You can find me on Twitter at Anna Hosnier, AnnaHosnieh. I'm on there tweeting about all my lovely, lovely works, plural. I have a podcast, Ethnically Ambiguous, that you can check out. Mm-hmm. It's all about being a person of color in America. Oh my God, you guys love it. Matt Leib was on it once, even though he's not a person of color. But you know what?
Hey,
sometimes you let a white guy on if he threatens you enough.
You know, I'm a person of colorful.
Yeah, sure, bud. We were really just trying to get closer to Francesca. But anyway, we also... I also have a Twitch show every Tuesday night called Deckheads Chief Stews, where me and my co-host Molly Lambert talk a lot about Bravo TV and the show Below Deck.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
Right. We just love boats, baby. We're just big boat bitches. Okay. I produce a bunch of podcasts, but who cares? Because I'm not the host and no one cares about people who aren't the host.
Well,
right?
I care that you're gainfully employed at podcasting. Who knew you could do that? So, you know, you ever
it's
hear
disgusting.
Of any jobs for me and Vince?
Nope. Sorry, but I'm gatekeeping.
As well you should.
Patreon.com/Frogcast. It is where we live and die, baby.
Wow.
No gainful employment for us. The $8 tier gets you a shout out. And Vince, this week we have three more $8 Pod Yourself a shout outs. Are you ready for this?
Woo.
Pod Yourself a shout out.
All right. The first is Sam Ennis.
Oh, Ennis. Remember Ennis Cosby? How he died? We call this guy the Cosby Show.
Wow.
All right. It is a gang name, so I kind of get it. Next one is Lewis.
Oh yeah, Lewis. You know, Lewis. We call him Louis Ears.
Oh, it is hot. I can tell it's hot.
Is that Lewis Farrakhan?
Just Lewis.
Huh. Okay, it's probably Farrakhan.
But I like that.
We call him Farrakhan.
Because Lewis. All right. Last one. and this is a softball for you because this is this one we had last week. They edited their tier down, but they edited it down to $8. So I think we have to say it again. I don't know. I felt like I should shout them out. Again, it's James Lazor.
Yeah. I mean, didn't we nickname this guy the recliner?
I think we did.
How can you beat that as a nickname?
Yeah. Also, you know what? I don't really want to encourage people editing their pledges down to $8 if you were at somewhere else. But I guess it's like if you were going to edit it down anyways and you didn't want to go to $5 and you were like, I still want to give them more for a shout out. Then, yeah, James Lazor, the recliner. Thank you again for not canceling, but instead just making it go down a little bit. That's appreciated.
You know what, James? You can edit it down all you want.
No, okay. No, do not listen to the gainfully employed person.
You don't need this.
We literally need this.
I'm just joking. Edit it back up, because I personally also have a Patreon. I won't plug it, though, because I'm not a monster, okay?
Thank you.
Go to their Patreon. Give them money.
Please do.
I personally only charge 25 cents.
Unbelievable. So, do not listen to a word she says. Patreon.com/Frogcast, frogcast@gmail.com for all your questions, comments, and concerns. There will be a mailbag episode coming up in 2 weeks, fellas and ladies and everyone else. So go to frogcast@gmail.com. Enter that in the subject. Well, not in the subject line. You know, send an email to us, and we will be reading them in a couple of weeks for the mailbag episode. Vince, what is the Google Voice number?
415-275-0030.
All right, everybody. It's hot as fuck outside, and we're trying to live our lives. Thank you so much for listening. And until next time, don't stop believing.
Carmella AJ is trying. Just look at the essay he's writing. He's reading The Lord of the Flies, and okay, he might be plagiarizing. Oh, Butterbee. Now Wegler will beg her to read Bovary. He's a regular Abler to her Heloise. Now Fagala Wegler is sleeping with she. But why did she leave? Carmella feeling hella guilty. So Wegler helps AJ get a C. Carmella used her only weapon, her pussy. Call me Carmella, call me Heloise, call me manipulative Madame Bovary. Call me a sinner, call me divorcee, but don't talk about my pussy, you better watch your back. Pawn yourself a gun, please leave us a review on iTunes. Pawn yourself a gun, and give us 5 stars and tell your friends about the podcast, please, for the love of God.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.